Hello, this is James Stansel, and welcome to the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with the author of Speculative Blackness, The Future of Race in Science Fiction, Andre M. Carrington. He's a professor of English at Drexel University in Philadelphia, and his book is published by the University of Minnesota Press. So I think you're going to enjoy this interview a lot. We're talking about science fiction and African Americans' place in it, and Afrofuturism. He does a really good job giving you a definition of Afrofuturism within this interview. And if you're familiar with Luke Cage or Uhura from Star Trek, or you know Black Lightning, or any of your black characters, or you know Kindred in science fiction, that's what we're going to be talking about today: the place of black people and African Americans in science fiction now, in the past, and in the future. All right. So pay attention, listen up, and enjoy. Speculative Blackness is the interview today. The author, Andre M. Carrington, and I'm your host, the New Books Network, the African American Studies Channel, James Stansel. Enjoy. Hello, and welcome to the New Books Network. I'm your host, James Stansel, on the African American Studies Channel. And today I have the great pleasure of talking to a professor from Drexel University, Andre M. Carrington. He's an assistant professor of English at Drexel University, and we're going to be talking today about his book, Speculative Blackness, The Future of Race in Science Fiction. How you doing, Andre?
Doing well, thanks.
Good, good. Sorry about that. I've been hearing the word Andre my entire life, but today, the first time I try to say it on a podcast, I end up tearing up the name. All right. And so, before we kind of get into the basics of your book here, Andre, I just want to tell you, you know, you're writing on a topic that's near and dear to my heart. I've been a fan of science fiction and space and technology and comic books and all those kind of things my whole life. So when I saw you wrote this book, I definitely wanted to have you on the show. So thank you so much for your interest in this subject. Have you always been a fan of science fiction yourself?
Yeah, I really have. I really came up knowing that there was, you know, space travel was somewhere in our future.
Right.
That seeing people who looked like me sometime, someday in the future was a possibility, or at least should be. So the topic has always been close to my heart, and I've always been really entertained and inspired by it.
Yeah, good, good. Yes, same here. And, you know, in today's world, there's so much more out there that we can be proud of and that we can see, you know, in terms of black science fiction. Or we're going to talk a lot about this term today, Afrofuturism, you know, as well. But before we get into, you know, like I said, the meat and, the main things about your book, you know, our audience would like to know about the people who write these books and the scholars who are behind them. So, Andre, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, your academic history, your background, and what drew you specifically to this topic?
Well, first off, I attended public school in suburban Maryland. I feel like that's important to say now that Betsy DeVos has her job. And while I did that, I was really interested in science, and I was motivated to really take it seriously and be excited about being good at it.
Right.
So when I went to college, I still had an enthusiasm for science as I discovered African American studies, which ended up being my major.
Right.
And so for me, you know, the sky was the limit in terms of sort of what I could do intellectually. And I always knew that there would be obstacles, but part of, you know, doing African American studies and being enthusiastic about learning was, you know, developing this attitude that if you're enthusiastic about something and you do the work,
right,
you can celebrate it and you can share that enthusiasm with other people. So when I, you know, when I went to college, I cared a lot about things that I do now as a professor. Teaching, you know, the works of Langston Hughes and a class on the Harlem Renaissance,
right,
teaching the thought of W.E.B. Du Bois and Anna Julia Cooper and literature classes. And just that motivation to see myself and to see black folks throughout history as intellectuals is really part and parcel with, you know, how much I care for and want people to learn from science fiction and comics and superheroes. So these are all intellectual products to be excited about.
Right. Absolutely, Andre. And you know, in today's world and going into the future, people are really starting to see just that, that, you know, comics and superheroes and science fiction, all type of speculative works are things that are definitely, you know, in the academy and things that are intellectual and important. It's not just kid stuff. In fact, it's probably more people who are adults who are into these type of things now than kids. Would you agree? Or is it, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think something that motivated me to write the book was I had grown up reading comics. Mm-hmm. And while I was in college, I stopped in part because, right, I went away to college in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And I was away from, like, you know, the comic store I would go to in high school. Right. So that whole part of, like, my weekly ritual of going to pick up my books on Wednesday and what I was following stopped for a couple years. Then I went to New York for graduate school, and one of the first things I did there was find a new comic store. Anybody who knew me at the time would know that, like, after a couple of years in graduate school, I was away. The comic store I would go to then closed, and it was like, it was heartbreaking. Oh, man, God. The guy who worked there, who was usually there when I picked up my books, who was, like, super excited when I told him I was teaching comics in a class, like, he called me at home and was like, oh, the store is closed. And I was like, how? No. it was a really important relationship.
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah, and I realized, like, oh, you know, as an adult, right, and as a scholar, having something that was a diversion, but also a source of research, also material to teach from, and a way of being in touch with creativity, it's really integral to a lot of people's lives. I mean, so few Americans read books, right? But people who read comics really have a regular commitment to reading material that raises important questions for them, that shows them an art form that's really meaningful. So I really value being able to do that wherever I live and whatever I read. And I know that that's the case for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we're here with the author of Speculative Blackness, The Future of Race in Science Fiction. And this is a book published by the University of Minnesota Press. And the author is Andre M. Carrington. And he is a professor and assistant professor of English at Drexel University. And this Drexel is in Philadelphia, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, Drexel in Philadelphia. And we're here on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. And so, Speculative Blackness, how long has this book been in the works for you, Andre?
Oh, man. Like a lot of academic books, the first book that a professor in literature or in social sciences usually writes starts from their dissertation research. That was the case for me. So it started in, I want to say, like, 2005 or six, and came to fruition, you know, about 10 years later.
Wow.
You know, and that process of shaping it as, you know, proof of my scholarship, right? Mm-hmm. Proof of, you know, my ability to do the research to earn a doctorate was one phase. And I, you know, a lot of people graduate from graduate school and say, oh, it's such a huge relief. And then the real work.
The real work begins.
Yeah. The work of actually making that into a book was a whole other phase, a whole different kind of work, and really took another 4 or 5 years to make something readable, to think about, you know, new questions that had come to mind since I had first started the research, and to research more things, right? To find out more things that I didn't know, that I didn't know I would need to talk about. And so it's really, right, a good third, almost a third of my life at this point, right? Like half of life, I guess. And that's, I hope that's represented in the book, right? That it's this journey that I took that is a real part of what I've been thinking about for a long time.
I think so, Andre. I mean, I really enjoyed the book. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit offline. You know, you talk about some subjects and things that are maybe like milestone, which we'll get into, and, you know, maybe aren't as familiar to, you know, people who maybe are younger, but they're very important in terms of Black science fiction. Now, pretty much everybody knows Uhura from from Star Trek, you know, the original series or now, but maybe some of the other things you talk about, they may not be as familiar with. And so, you know, I applaud you for your effort, your research, and the time that you took, and the love, you know, the love for the genre that's well evidenced in your writing. And so I appreciate that. And like I said, when I was a young person, and I don't know about you, these books weren't out there. For young people, definitely, or people who are interested in science fiction and African Americans in science fiction, you definitely want to check out Andre's book. And the book is Speculative Blackness, The Future of Race Science Fiction, the Future of Race in Science Fiction, by the University of Minnesota Press. And before we get into the book a little bit more, Andre, is there anyone that you want to give a shout out to, or that you want to mention that was really influential to you as you went through the process of writing this book or becoming an academic scholar?
Yeah. When I was in graduate school, my advisor, mentor, and became a friend was Jose Esteban Munoz.
Oh, okay.
He was a scholar of performance studies, really a pioneer in that field, mm-hmm. And really somebody responsible for so performance studies is a field of scholarship that deals with theater and performance art, but also sort of recognizes how we engage in performance as a part of our everyday life, right? And how so many different art forms can be considered as performance if you think of them in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And even politics, right? Politics involves a great deal of performance, not in the sense of like a put on, but really just like showing up, like staging an intervention.
Mm-hmm.
And Jose's work really shaped a whole generation of scholars.
Mm-hmm.
We are all finding each other now since he passed away a couple years ago.
Right.
And his influence, I think, really made a lot of people like me see that as people of color, as queer people of color, as scholars of mm-hmm. Topics that are considered way out or outre or like too cool and trendy, right, to be scholarly.
Right.
He was someone who encouraged that and encouraged us to see what we do as valuable. And I can't talk about the book without really giving honor to his ability to motivate me and other people to do that kind of work.
That's awesome, Andre. And I'm sure he's very proud of you right now,
he's always.
He's very proud of you right now, the work you've done and the others that he helped shape, to become scholars. So thank you for mentioning him and his work and his influence on you. That's really awesome. And so the book is Speculative Blackness, The Future of Race in Science Fiction. And we're here on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel, with author Andre M. Carrington. He is an assistant professor of English at Drexel University. And his book is published by the University of Minnesota Press. And so, Andre, let's kind of get into the book a little bit. The title, Speculative Blackness. Some people may not be familiar with that. Can you maybe explain a little what that means?
Sure. So speculative fiction is kind of an umbrella uh-huh. under which you can think of science fiction mm-hmm. and fantasy mm-hmm. and horror and those genres and the themes they deal with under kind of the same banner of speculative fiction.
Right.
Because they're kinds of fiction that deal with things that either can't happen, right, that are just straight up impossible according to science, or things that we can't say happened,
mm-hmm.
right? Things that are part of a counterfactual history, right?
Right,
or like a,
right.
a possible future that hasn't come yet or might never come.
Mm-hmm.
And also a different perspective, a different way of thinking about what is possible scientifically, politically, historically.
Right.
So speculative is a good adjective for all of those things that we find mm-hmm. in horror movies and superhero comics and science fiction novels. But it's also a way of sort of grounding certain parts of Black identity, right,
okay.
and certain parts of Black culture that come up with ideas like that, and that come up with cultural practices that speculate, right,
mm-hmm.
that depart from what's real or what's known and ask
ah.
about what might be, what could have been.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, yeah. So speculative blackness, right. And so on your book cover, I see it looks like maybe a automaton or kind of a robot or android man.
And yeah, yeah.
Can you explain that and the significance to the audience?
Oh, totally. I had, first of all, I mean, part of that discovery is a testament to the publisher, to the press, for right. finding that image. And I realized, like, when I saw it, I was like, whoa, this is, where did you find this? but I also, when I looked at the original image, it's by an artist who is based in Switzerland, who does a lot of sort of digital art with, like, science fiction, futuristic themes and stuff.
Oh, okay.
But the figure on the cover is like this black cyborg
right.
who also has who's like visibly right, like in complexion is visibly a black person,
right?
But also has like pink makeup on, and seeing that original image,
mm-hmm.
like even with it changed to really fit the cover to give you that contrast, to give you a sense of, you know, that there's more underneath that image.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing the original was super inspiring because I saw it as like, oh my gosh, this is perfect. It's an image of someone who is clearly in or of the future.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's like a new kind of person in the world, but also someone who is black and someone who is gender nonconforming. And mm-hmm. I thought like, that's exactly the future I want to be a part of, right? Like that's who I want to be in the future. That's who I want to meet in the future. And
right. okay.
and that's who it's for, you know? That's who investigating awesome. The history of science fiction and its imagery is for. It's for creating a future that welcomes people like that.
Right. That's great, Andre. Thank you for sharing that. Right. So this definitely is some speculative blackness here, you know? This
yes.
is a possible future and a future that you yourself personally would be interested in, along with many other people as well, not just you. All right. Yeah, that's awesome. And so, you know, let's kind of get into some of the different subjects that you talk about in the book. We can start anywhere that you like. If you have some specific things that you think the audience should pay attention to or that you'd like to discuss.
Sure. I would start with the introduction,
mm-hmm.
but if anyone listens to other episodes of this podcast
mm-hmm.
or, you know, looks at other nonfiction critical books like this,
mm-hmm.
you realize that the introduction is actually the last thing the author writes.
Right.
So it doesn't, right? Because it doesn't work until you know what it is you're introducing.
Right.
So actually, the content of the book that starts in the first chapter
mm-hmm.
kind of speaks to the perspective that I wanted to take. The first chapter is about a black writer in the 1950s
mm-hmm.
who was a part of science fiction fan culture
mm-hmm.
at a time when the way that science fiction fans found each other and corresponded and talked about what interested them and got to know each other was through fanzines, was through amateur printed magazines that they would send through the mail and form associations to distribute to each other.
Wow.
That story is kind of known as a part of the history of science fiction and
mm-hmm.
something that has always let fans participate and has made it kind of democratic.
Right.
A lot of authors got their start
right.
writing letters to comment about what they read. But this black fan writer who I wrote about is a person who wasn't real, right? He was a hoax. He was an invention of some white fans who wanted to sort of bring the idea of racial integration into their community
wow.
and bring the idea and the persona of a black person into their group in which everybody understood themselves to be all white.
Mm-hmm.
So that chapter kind of it sets the stage in a number of ways for the way that I look at science fiction in the book. It's about fans as people who make the genre meaningful, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fans interpret a text, they buy books, they see films, they talk about them, they give them the thumbs up or thumbs down,
right.
and they clue other people in to things that they might not find out about. But fandom also is something that has a history. And one thing that I wanted to do in the book was to talk about fan culture and science fiction fan communities in a way that's different from the way that I had seen some other books and studies do it
okay.
by
right.
looking back at earlier moments. And part of the hypothesis that I bring to the whole book is that black people have always been part of science fiction and have always been fans,
mm-hmm.
but have also kind of been outsiders to the fan community or outsiders to the practice of being authors
right.
because of racial oppression. And this moment from the 50s was one that kind of encapsulated a lot of those themes, right? Where these ideas of who black people are and what blackness means to science fiction really took place in our absence, right? That the meaning of blackness for science fiction and in the lives of science fiction fans is based historically more on what white folks think of us than what we actually say about ourselves. So that episode from that history really, I think, starts the conversation about what blackness means in science fiction at an early enough point, right? At a point where we can say, okay, it's not that these are new questions, it's that these are changing questions that have been there over time.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think about some of your early 50s television shows and even going to the 60s and the 70s where the portrayal of black people may not have been what people really experienced day by day, or you know, it wasn't, you know, what everyone was experiencing. And so, you know, this was like what's exactly what you're talking about here, Andre, what someone else's portrayal of what they think black people are. Very interesting. And it's kind of sad in a way that, you know, it encompasses all different genre types, you know, not just television, but science fiction as well. You know, the made up or created black person. Wow. Very interesting.
Yeah, there are a number of those, right? And part of what was important to me was that, first, that the way that we think about science fiction in the academy, you know, academically, it takes up it has a healthy, thriving sort of sub-community in the study of film, because there are great science fiction films and people who specialize in talking about that. And it has a good representation in the study of literature, because there's a lot of literary texts, in part because science fiction writers have to write a lot to make a living, right? And always have had to sort of make their way by selling books and selling stories and selling magazines. So there's a lot to work with. But there's less commentary, I think, about the way that fans, especially in the present, the way that like the mass audience, the general public encounters these questions and these narratives is often on TV, in comic books, in movies, in these ways that come to them rather than seeking them out, right? There's a saying that I think a lot of writers for comics and artists who make comics think about and that informs their work, and that's that every comic, every issue of a comic is somebody's first comic book. Right.
Right. That's a good way to think about it.
So for me, thinking about, right, why I care a great deal about black characters in science fiction, about black authors and artists who create these images of ourselves, and also the way we're depicted by others, I think about that all the time. But for a lot of people coming to that imagery for the first time, or if that's the only time they engage with that intersection of blackness and science fiction, is, you know, this one popular image like Storm in the X-Men or like Uhura in Star Trek, that to associate those images with each other, to say that they're part of a shared history and a set of conventions is, I think, to start the conversation in a place that says science fiction is part of popular culture. These questions of race and racism are integral to popular culture for everybody, because we all come from different perspectives. And I wanted to be able to have the conversation on that popular plane, right? On the plane of things that people will probably recognize. And I wanted to balance that with sort of digging deep into the archives and texts that maybe people have to specialize in or have to go looking for to find.
Okay. And we're here today on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel, with the author of Speculative Blackness, The Future of Race in Science Fiction. And his book is published by the University of Minnesota Press. And we're here with Andre Carrington. He's an assistant professor of English at Drexel University. And so if you're interested in science fiction, specifically African American science fiction, you're going to want to check out Speculative Blackness. Speculative Blackness. Absolutely. And so, Andre, I guess I have to ask you, too, you know, what was your favorite comic growing up, or your favorite television show, science fiction show?
I grew up, and this is like such a generational marker. I grew up watching Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Okay.
Right? That was it. That was the moment. And there's really like not just for everybody around today, but really like in the academy in particular, right? In among academics, if you're somebody who thinks of Star Trek and thinks of that original cast with with you know William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy, that's a real generational touchstone. And if you're my generation, then you grew up watching, you know, Patrick Stewart, LeVar Burton, and that was a moment, right? That shaped your view of like, where does blackness come into contact with science fiction, right? So for my generation, it was like, oh, this black dude is an engineer. This black dude is a person who's disabled, but like in the future, you know, he's a cyborg. So, right, he can like, he can see, but he's a scientist, he's a space explorer. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. And that, I think, marks the moment I grew up in a way that a lot of people, right, who came up in the 80s and 90s saw. And I wrote a chapter in the book about Star Trek Deep Space Nine because it's so formative, right? It's so unique in that it puts this black actor center stage and really takes on these racial questions very directly and takes them on in a way that reflects on, you know, the history of those kinds of images on television and in literature.
Absolutely. Benjamin Sisko, and I grew up with him as well. I was very excited. Avery Brooks, I think, is the actor, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, wow, he's a black man, and he's a captain. He's in charge.
Yeah, it was really formative. And one of the things I noticed it at the time, and this is one of those sort of rhetorical things that lots of nerds will get, and I think that lots of like lots of nerds in general, right? No matter what you nerd out about, it's the kind of thing you might pick up on. And I think for black nerds in particular, we'll pick up on the fact that when Deep Space Nine starts on television in the mid-90s, Avery Brooks' character is not a captain yet. He's a commander, right? So he's like not quite as advanced, not quite as in charge as these lead characters in the shows we've seen before. And that's the kind of detail that's like a nerdy thing to home in on, but it's exactly the kind of like, that's the attitude that people bring to science fiction, especially like if you're talking about, you know, series of novels that have been around since the 1970s, or you're talking about TV shows that have been on for 30 years, people have taken like a scholarly interest in
them. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
And so, so to pick up on that kind of thing, or to pick up on the fact that, oh, this is a black person who thinks of himself as black in the future, and we haven't really heard that talked about explicitly, right? Or to pick up on the idea that, oh, these aliens on a planet that was colonized talk about colonialism as like, oh, that's that we know what colonialism is. It's a real historical thing. So so that particular moment in the 90s on television was compelling for me because it raised questions directly. And looking at that moment as a touchstone speaks to, I think, both the scholarly interest and the nerd, the fan interest that's already present, and says, you know, race and racism are central to both those things.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And so the show for, you know, those of the younger of us who are listening, the show is Deep Space Nine. You know, you had, you know, Commander Sisko, who was played by Avery Brooks, who was the commander. He was in charge of that space station. We won't get all into the the details, but it was considered a pretty special location because, you know, you could go from there to, you know, all kinds of other places. But it was different because you didn't really have regularly scheduled black commanders or captains in Star Trek. You know, but, you know, from that time you started having women and you started having, you know, other captains. And, you know, other officers, like you mentioned, Geordi LaForge on your favorite show, The Next Generation. And going way back, which was, you know, the subject of your second chapter, Lieutenant Uhura, you know, going way back, you know, to the 60s as a communications officer. So we were there in different ways.
Right. And that, I think, is it's an encouraging thing to be able to say as a scholar. I think for a lot of people, like starting a conversation is exciting as a scholar, but for me, it's humbling and it's encouraging to be able to pick up a conversation that's been going on and to say it's important, right? So I read Nichelle Nichols' memoir, which is titled Beyond Uhura, and
most of the original Star Trek cast have written memoirs. William Shatner has written several. Leonard Nimoy wrote several. Nimoy wrote one called I Am Not Spock.
I remember and wrote that.
Another one called I Am Spock, which is great, right? But in all their memoirs, right, they talk about their careers as actors. They talk about what brought them to acting, what role science has played in their life, because right. science has been such a part of science fiction. But Nichelle Nichols' career is amazing. I mean, her memoir is both a sort of celebrity biography, but it's also really a black girl story, mm-hmm. right? It's really an African-American woman coming of age and becoming an artist and becoming an intellectual in this way that I think we can really appreciate seeing what she has done since that defining TV role and movie roles, and seeing her as, you know, really one of few people who had that kind of opportunity mm-hmm. to act, to do a role like that that wasn't stereotypical in the 60s.
Right. And the character lives on.
Yeah, she lives on in a way that I think we can be really proud of now, right? Because she was not a character who had a whole lot of lines, right? That's really important. She had screen time because you had to see her on the set, but she didn't say as much and she didn't do as much. The fact that her career has endured, though, the fact that she parlayed that screen role into more screen roles, into expanding her role in the show and in the films over many years, and that she has acted for so many years and done so many different types of roles since then, but can still look at that character and appreciate it. That's something I think I hope every black woman actor can do today. I hope that Absolutely. They can follow her example. And I just hope that seeing what she has been able to do informs how many people can live artistic careers.
Right. And I was thinking of just the current version of the character, too, played by, I think the actress is Zoe Saldana.
Yeah.
And, you know, in this new series of movies, the character is much more integrally, a part of the story, even being a love interest for Spock, even.
yeah. I think that's fantastic. Right. It's a really good evolution of the role. And it answers a question that's really right. It's a question that's right there. Right. Which is which could be answered a lot of different ways. Right. There are a few moments in the original Star Trek series where we see Uhura in a potential romantic situation, but not many. But then the way that you make a blockbuster action movie today, which is what the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies are,
right.
Is that you have to put some romantic plot somewhere. And for some reason, right, if you have a lead actress, that has to be right, what she's there for. But at least they answer the question, right? And if they answered it by saying, oh, she's asexual, she doesn't want a relationship, she doesn't want romance, or she doesn't want sex, that would be cool. And if they answered it saying, like, oh, she's interested in women and there wasn't a woman interested in her in that version of the story, that would be cool too. But if they answer it and say, like, oh, well, she's interested in this alien dude, and, like, that's – they make that work, right? He is very different in terms of his sexuality from other people.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that is a really interesting, fascinating kind of couple to depict. And it's a cool thing to do for an action movie.
Yeah,
I think it works out well.
And it shows that love takes many different forms. And, you know, you can't really control, what happens, you know. You know, you just kind of love who you love and, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah,
that was a really interesting approach for me. Well, even with, it's not the subject of your book, but even with Sulu, you know, in the most,
you know,
and so I was really happy to see that, you know, that they approached it in that way with him having a child and having a husband in the most recent one.
And yeah, so, I mean, I just think that one of the benefits of how ardent and how passionate science fiction fans are about the narratives that are meaningful to us is that you can keep making the argument for what makes a story compelling, and you can make it in many different ways. And I really actually like when we get, you know, multiple contradictory, inconsistent versions of these stories over many years, because it gives you an entry point and it gives you a point to pick up on that might be exactly what you want from it.
Yeah. what you potentially could be interested in or what could be speaking to you from your own life experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And I'm here with the author of Speculative Blackness, The Future of Race in Science Fiction. And the author is Andre Carrington, and he is from the Drexel University, an assistant professor of English at Drexel. And the book is published by the University of Minnesota Press. And you're listening to me, James Stancil, your host on the New Books Network, the African American Studies Channel. And, you know, as I was going through your book, Andre, you know, I was really excited to see you write about Icon, one of the one of the milestone comics characters. So let's talk about Milestone a little, you know, for people who are younger and may not be familiar with, you know, that Milestone era. Can you, you know, talk about Icon or maybe Milestone and its importance to Black history and to speculative Blackness?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So Milestone Media was an independent Black-owned company that produced multiracial, multicultural superhero comics in the 90s, and they reached a lot of people because they were distributed by DC Comics. So, right, DC had their imprint on them, but they could put Milestone Comics in any and all of the bookstores that DC Comics' titles like Superman and Batman would be in. So that meant they could reach me, and they could reach anybody, right? So it was really unique, right, to see comics that were for everyone, but really by and about people of color, able to reach people of color, right? So they didn't like overlook a Black audience. They didn't overlook the Black members of their target demographic, who were usually like adolescent young men and women, but they really integrated Black and Latino and Asian American and Native people into that storytelling and into the effort to reach them. So like economically and structurally, there are all these fascinating things about that business model, about what it achieved while it was going, and about just telling superhero stories, right? Showing, you know, teams and gangs and villains and conspiracies and all the good stuff you see in superhero stories, in this environment where people looked like and had lives that were like lots of the people who were already reading comics, right? But didn't quite see their perspective on the story told, right? Or didn't quite see, like, you know, what their superhero origin story would be told, right? So it was, their comics were really spectacular, not just for what they achieved and how they did it, but they were just extremely high quality. I think that we've seen a great enthusiasm for comic books come back in recent years.
Right.
And I think we've seen a reinvestment in their quality. Right? I think that there are some real stars writing and making comics today. Roxane Gay writes the World of Wakanda comic, which is amazing. Gail Simone's career in comics has been going strong for years, and that's
absolutely
spectacular. And there are a lot more independent authors who make who produce graphic novels or produce web comics that get shine now that they wouldn't have like 10 years ago. But I think that Milestone was a part of what made that possible. And at the same time, Milestone is sort of a missing chapter in the history of, you know, superhero comics as this popular form that people look to or look back on fondly, because it was there for a lot of people in their teen years, like it was for me. And I think that it's sort of left out of the conversation of, you know, how do we do diversity in storytelling, or how do we balance these ordinary concerns with racism and economic disadvantage with these far-fetched superhero stories. And they did it, right? It's not a new thing. They did it, and they did it extremely well in the 90s. It's a matter of, you know, returning to the source and picking up those skills.
You know, I would love to see some, you know, we've got all these Avengers movies and Superman and Batman. I would love to see Icon out there, or, you know, some of the other, was it Hardware, or so, you know, some of those other characters, you know, in their own movies or on television. So Oprah, if you're listening, let's get some let's get some science fiction on the OWN network.
I'm like, where is this capital going to come from? Oprah? I don't know. But if someone gets a Milestone comic to Oprah, it will, I mean, they will need to put it back in print, you know?
Yeah, and there are like graphic novel versions of, you know,
yeah,
available out there.
There's a great afterlife of those properties, right? They're not under the same umbrella anymore, but Dennis Cowan, one of the main artists who worked on Milestone Comics, is still doing great work. Dwayne McDuffie, who was kind of the mastermind behind a lot of that material, passed away.
Fortunately, yeah, he passed away.
But he had a huge role in making DC Comics animated superhero series take place on the Cartoon Network and Warner Brothers.
Right.
And so those things that they made possible at the time have really, I think, done a great service and like a really historic service for just telling stories about superheroes and telling stories about people of color in any medium.
Absolutely. And so what is your opinion on some of the things that are out now? You know, you have Luke Cage that's really popular on Netflix. You have the Black Panther movie coming out soon. And, you know, Black Panther was heavily featured in the last Captain America movie. You know, you know, what are your thoughts on those? I mean, you know, are we moving more towards having, you know, some main black characters, you know, and, you know, some feature length, you know, black characters on, you know, television? You know, Black Lightning is going to be coming out pretty soon.
Yeah, I am really excited for that Black Lightning TV show that was announced, in part because of who's going to be involved in it, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's I think it's one of the creators is Mara Brock Akil.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, whoa, this is all right, black women, this is a come up. In part, it's a come up because, you know, action primetime TV shows are great, right? They sell good advertising, and I am very happy for people who create that kind of stuff to really get the shine that they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it will make that series and that story about a black superhero a story that has some complex adult themes and perspective, right? There will be that action adventure, but there will be that human side of the story that I think has made Mara Brock Akil successful. And I think we'll just take seriously the interest that black women and that young women of color show in stories like this, right? I mean, if I think of one place online and in the world of fans that has like sustained the enthusiasm for nerdy culture in recent years and Jamie Broadnax and Black Girl Nerds. And that's, you know, that's really they speak to, you know, this discerning public, right? This set of consumers and or, you know, creative thinkers and artistic minded people who want to see, you know, stories that do justice to where they're coming from. And that's something that makes me really excited. It's not even to knock like Luke Cage because they did great work for the black women characters who are on that series.
Mm-hmm.
But it's to say that that's really taking something that's going right and extending it. So I've been like, I'm super excited to see that version of that story done well. I was excited to see the performances in Captain America Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And the depictions of Black Panther and the little gestures toward what we might expect in that film.
Mm-hmm, right.
I'm also excited to see how that like invigorated and drew people's interest to Ta-Nehisi Coates writing a comic. Writing a comic, because I see like here is this wonderful crossover between black writers, right? People who write in different genres in print and this blockbuster, you know, popular entertainment that doesn't necessarily take up as big a role in, you know, the high-minded academic conversations that I am happy to be able to have, right? To see that crossover and that renewed interest in, you know, what are contemporary black writers doing, right? What is somebody who writes bad feminist, right? What is Roxane Gay as a black woman saying as a literary professional, right? What is the person who wrote Between the World and Me and Beautiful Struggle, right? What is this contemporary black author doing? And to make that connection is, I think, really important because it reminds us, you know, black people are deep thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
We do this kind of work and we do it for fun. And we also do it, you know, because we're driven to, because we have those intellectual passions.
Absolutely. And, you know, another series that's going to be coming out soon is Cloak and Dagger, which is going to be on the Freeform, one of the which is formerly ABC Family, which is a love story between a young black male and a white female. You know, again, this was a, you know, a comic that I grew up reading. And so it'll be interesting to see how that is portrayed. And I think that'll be out sometime later in the year.
I don't know. I don't know Cloak and Dagger well as a story. But I do think that because like I've seen glimpses of them in other comics occasionally, and I thought like, oh yeah, like this is something that has its own history, and then they show up as like, oh yeah, this is one of a few superhero stories about interracial relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But that's most of what I know about them. Mm-hmm. So I'm really going to have to look to write the TV version to get any sense of them beyond that, right? Yeah. To get any sense of, like, how exactly does the superhero, the science fiction element of that work? Because I've really never known, like, the reputation of them outside of, oh, yeah, this is, like, dealing with this serious relationship issue.
Well, don't worry, Andre. I'll get you up to speed after the
Thank
interview.
Thank you.
I'll point you to one of my articles I wrote about it. And
excellent.
And then I'll get you up to speed. We could talk about that offline. But, yeah, it's just, it should be an interesting show. And, you know, the interracial aspect, like you said, I think will be really interesting to see. Because the Freeform is something that's is geared towards children or, like, younger audience.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it would be interesting to see. And the director of, if you remember the movie Love and Basketball.
Oh, yeah.
And she's done a couple of other
movies. Tremendous.
Yeah. Well, she is directing the pilot episode.
Oh, excellent.
All right. And so, you know, so that tells you there's going to be some love and some, you know, some kind of heavy romantic tension or whatever the case may be. And so,
Oh, yeah.
So that's certainly some speculative blackness when we think about what you're going to get with Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah, yeah. Just thinking about Gina Prince Bythewood, the director, she made Beyond the Lights.
That's it. I think it's another
film, you know, so it's somebody else's job to have that discussion with you and maybe on the same channel, maybe on another. But this is an argument that I think is fun to have, right? Afrofuturism is in part, right, telling any kind of story of blackness, any future for us, any perspective on us that isn't, right, you know, that isn't sort of like held back, but is like moving forward, is expansive, is mindful. And Beyond the Lights was like, because of its complexity, because of the quality of the imagery and the performances in it, it was just, you know, it's a really good love story, and it's also a really inspiring everyday sort of story for black people. But Gina Prince Bythewood doing that, I think, okay, if she wants to be an Afrofuturist, if we want to say Afrofuturism is what she has done with stories that aren't even science fiction, I'm here for it. Right.
And so, yeah, we're going to see what she does.
Yeah,
we're going to see what she does with this Cloak and Dagger, because that definitely is going to put her fully into that, you know, astrofuturism camp. Right. And so when we talk about speculative blackness, which is your book title, but also astrofuturism, thank you for Afrofuturism. Thank you for explaining that to the audiences, because, you know, that's really what we're talking about. Black people in the future ideals, you know, things that we can do. And, you know, when I was younger, Andre, we used to always joke, are there going to be black people in the future? Because you look at these shows on television, there were no black people, or there was one.
Right.
So, like, you know, what happened to us? Did they get rid of us all?
Yeah, and that's wild, isn't it? I mean, the part of what I critique and what I try to diagnose in the book is really just kind of the failure of imagination, right, that says we can't think in sophisticated ways about the future and also think in sophisticated ways about race and racism. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, that's, you know, black writers can do that. Many authors of color can do that. And some white writers can do that. And that proves that it's not that it can't be done, right? So to the extent that it's not done, to the extent that we look to the future and see it is wonderful, it's tremendous that Lieutenant Uhura is there, that should mean, oh, it makes all the sense in the world that in 1960 and in 1860, right, people should know black people are intelligent and free and gifted and unique, right? But it always takes some critique and some struggle just to make that known, right? Just to expand people's imagination.
Absolutely.
To receive that message and to work with it.
So we're there. We're everywhere. We're in the future.
Yeah.
We're in the past. You know, as African Americans, you know, we are there. And so the book is Speculative Blackness, The Future of Race in Science Fiction. And I think the future is bright of race in science fiction. I don't know about you, Andre. What do you think?
Actually, that has been a question that comes up sometimes, of whether Afrofuturists are sort of in a camp or among thinkers who, you know, who predict or who look forward to a good or a better future.
Right.
Sometimes it is that. And sometimes, particularly in the fiction of Octavia Butler, in the fiction of Samuel Delaney, in some of the fiction of Jewel Gomez, in some of the fiction of Nnedi Okorafor, right, I could go on. Black people who tell science fiction stories often think of the future, and it seems pessimistic, but there are still many of the same problems we have today, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that, oh, Black people are actually pessimistic. And it's also not to say that that Black people don't think things will ever change. But I think something in the work of those writers I mentioned in particular, there's a way of thinking about the future and being optimistic in some respects, right? Thinking that we will still be here and we'll be able to thrive. And if there are continued struggles, we'll be able to continue them and triumph in certain ways. But there's also a kind of responsibility that some of those authors take up that says, well, we're not going to portray the future instead of thinking about the problems of the present, right? We're going to portray it and think maybe we'll come up with some ways of solving some of the problems of the present, but we won't stop thinking about them, right? We won't take environmental degradation off the table. We won't take racism off the table. We won't take patriarchy off the table. We might show some options for getting through them, and we might show some possibilities for continuing and succeeding in some of the struggles we have today. And that I think means, you know, looking at enough science fiction, enough science fiction by Black thinkers, allows you to be optimistic if you want to be, and allows you to not be pessimistic if you want to be. And I think that's encouraging.
Absolutely. Absolutely encouraging. So that's definitely something to think about for the future. Just like in the present and the past, it's not perfect.
No, it never was.
It never was, and unfortunately, it probably never will be. So, you know, we just do the best we can with what we have. And that's what they're going to be doing in the future, Cisco and Uhura and everybody else, right?
Yeah. This is really, I'm reading some of, I just read Binti by Nnedi Okorafor, and it's tremendous. And there's a sequel, but I'm a little bit mad that there's like a third sequel, so I'm already behind. So I'm trying to catch up with it now. But when I read stories like that and I think, oh, man, this is – it's a whole other level, the perspective that is like planetary and really grounded and really in-depth that some writers working today have. I think that's that is exactly how we will make it. You know, we'll make it in the future because we can do this now.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Well said. And we talked a little bit earlier, and I just want to mention this on the air. You know, we talked about this future project that's going to be coming with Aaron Magruder and Will Packer, which is going to be on Amazon, right? And it's going to be similar to the it's a counterfactual history, alternate history show, and it's kind of shrouded in mystery, but it's supposed to kind of be similar or take a cue from The Man in High Castle, which is kind of an alternate history about what if Germany would have won World War II.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that's definitely going to be something we should look out for, Andre, you know, in terms of, you know, Black science fiction. You know, what is it going to be about? You know, Black people in the future, Black people in the past? You know, I don't know. You know, it'll be interesting to see, right?
Yeah. I was thinking when you raised the you know, possibility of what we'll see in that project, I was thinking two things. I was thinking, one, if Aaron Magruder is involved, it's going to make people mad, and it's going to make people laugh, right?
It'll be at the same time.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm excited. I'm here for it. right? It'll be funny, but sometimes it'll be funny because it's true and that'll make you mad. I also thought, oh, it sounds like this counterfactual history thing, this what if storytelling, it made me think of the mockumentary Confederate States of America.
Right, CSA, right.
And that, when I heard about that, oh, I don't know if this is going to be good, right, years ago when it was out. When I saw it, it was on video. But I thought, I don't know that I want to see that because I didn't know, like, what the format would be. I sort of knew it was going to be a mockumentary. But I looked it up and found out, oh, okay, the writer and director was black. That's interesting because I thought – I didn't know that we would be that interested in telling that kind of story. But when I saw it, I realized like, oh, there is really like a – there's a comic perspective in that that's so dark. And it's dark and it's grim, but it's really smart. It's really funny. And I think that's you know, that's somebody who is a student of black history. That's somebody who has been paying attention, right, to – what the Confederacy meant to black people, right? And what its history in the present means to black people. And so that way of flipping the script of telling that what if story that people attentive to black history tell, that's an exciting thing. So I think I'm glad it will be funny. So I'm looking forward to it if it promises some of that.
Right. And so, and the movie that Andre's talking about is CSA, yeah. I think is, you know, yeah, Confederate States of America. And it's a kind of an alternate history about what if, you know, if the Confederate States of America existed into today's world.
Yeah. Right?
And so, you know, and I was also thinking maybe this Magruder Packer project could be Ben H. Winter's Underground Airlines, which is about four states. And this is a recent book that came out. It's a novel about four states, you know, that still have slavery up until the present day, and you know what kind of would happen with that, and you know then there's also some other kind of what if things that could potentially be the subject of a Magruder Packer collaboration, but I guess we'll have to just wait and see.
Yeah, I am I'm excited by how much, and it's not even that it is that much, but just how much more attention to, you know, what black folks have said and thought about American history we see in some of these narratives today. And that's encouraging, right? It validates my sense that black history is American history, right? That, you know, it's now, when we're recording this, it's the first day of Women's History Month, right? And that Women's History Month is Black Women's History Month too, right? That it really, seeing projects like this come to fruition, seeing people rethinking the legacies of the past, that's actually something that I think black folks concerned with the future do, right? That we reconsider what's important and we show it in different ways.
Absolutely. Well said, Andre. Well said. And, you know, I'm looking at our time here, Andre. I know that you've got to get back to those Drexel University students and grade some papers and do some of that scholarly work that pays the bills in addition to writing your books. But before we go, I did want to ask you, if you don't mind sharing, you know, what are some things that you're currently working on or some future research projects or things that, you know, maybe you don't mind sharing with the audience or other places that people could find your work?
For sure. I had the good fortune of writing for Black Perspectives, the blog of the African American Intellectual History Society recently. I wrote an essay about the comic Black Panther that in part is a way of kind of returning to comics a bit. I wrote a bit, two chapters of Speculative Blackness are about comics, but as I said, it's hard to keep up with things that are current. But being able to go back to some of that and to display certain interests in what's going on that's contemporary has been really exciting. So I wrote that, and I'm also writing a chapter for a book that is kind of a guide to literary interpretation and queer theory. And the chapter of that book will be about queer theory and comics and what they do for each other and what they have to do with each other.
Okay. And do you know, has that book been titled yet?
Yeah, it's titled After Queer Studies. It will come out from Cambridge University Press. I think sometime next year. The editors are wrangling a lot of people like me who made it in just under the deadline for their chapters. So, I'll be a part of that.
Trying to get you guys in. Right. And the piece that you wrote for Black Perspectives, which I read, by the way, I want to let you know that. That was before we had met, so I didn't even realize that was you. But I know Dr. Blaine very, very well, so I read that quite a bit. And it's the African American Intellectual History Society, right? And Black Perspective. So Jeff, definitely check out Andre's work there on Black Panther. And that wasn't that long ago. That was just maybe a few months back, right?
Yeah.
And it's still available.
Yeah.
It's still available on the page.
Yeah. It still is. And it's a part about Black Panther's a good hook. But it's also just about the overall, right, sort of what that represents, that there's a certain crossover moment for comics and science fiction and the interest that feels like African-American studies have had for a long time. And we're seeing it in these visual media now.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, check Andre out. Andre M. Carrington, his piece on Black Perspectives, the African American Intellectual History Society's blog page. And you should definitely check out his book, which is the main focus we're talking about today, Speculative Blackness, The Future of Race in Science Fiction. And it's published by the University of Minnesota Press. And again, the author is Andre Carrington, and he's an assistant professor of English at Drexel University. And with that, Andre, I think we're going to let you go, get back to grading. I don't know if you want to say hello to any of your English students over at Drexel.
Oh, I mean, I really hope that they listen to the podcast, because it means that they are keeping up with new books. And more power to them. I have trouble keeping up with new books, but I'm glad that they are.
All right. So will Dr. Carrington be giving them any extra credit?
No, I don't believe that. I really don't.
I tried, y'all. All right, so we're going to let Dr. Carrington get back to work at Drexel over in Philadelphia. And thank you so much, Dr. Carrington, for your time today. I enjoyed talking with you about your book, Speculative
Blackness. Thank you. It's been great.
Absolutely. And so we're going to end it here on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. We're here with Andre Carrington, the book Speculative Blackness. So you can tell the audience goodbye. Andre, we'll see you later.
Thanks very much.
All right. Take care, and we'll see you next time on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. I'm your host, James Stansel. Peace and love. All right, we're back. This is your host, James Stansel, of the New Books Network, African American Studies channel. And I just finished an interview up with Andre M. Carrington about his book Speculative Blackness, The Future of Race in Science Fiction. It's published by the University of Minnesota Press. And if you're in Philadelphia, go by and check Andre out. He is an assistant professor of English at Drexel University. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Black science fiction is becoming something that you see more and more now. And he does a great job, like I said earlier, of kind of going into the history and talking about some specific aspects and elements in his book. So definitely check his book out. And if you're interested in black science fiction, Andre told me to let you know, hey, email him, look for him on Twitter or on Facebook. He would love to hear from you. He is definitely a fan of science fiction in general and black science fiction in particular. So I hope you enjoyed that interview, and we will see you next time and hear you next time on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel, and I'm your host, James Stansel. Take care, peace, and love.